Hello, this is Nick Bettens. I'm here on October 30th, 2022. I'm here with Richard Warner, and we are recording an oral history for the Performing Arts Legacy Project, which is a part of the Entertainment Community Fund. So, Richard, we talked about in your about page about the early rumblings of your theater experience. Do you want to talk a little bit more about your MFA program experience?
Sure. But you know what, Nick, I want to start this way. I just want to start by saying thanking you. This whole thing has been a terrific journey, sir, with you. And anybody who takes this journey on PAL realizes how much they are in debt to their fellow. And Nick, everyone has been such a great partner throughout this whole thing. And so I thank you for that. It's just been a real fun journey with you. You know, it's interesting, you know, the premise that I had on this was to use this opportunity to find out what path I took to become an acting teacher. And putting those mosaic pieces together is what Nick has helped me with, which you helped me with, Nick. And so for me, it's really now looking back on my MFA program and seeing what really, after 50 years looking back, what happened there and what I remember. And here's what I remember. I left my undergraduate program with a great deal of, I guess I'd call it exuberance. I was wide-eyed. I was naive. I was full of ambition. I was ready to take on the world. And boy, I got to that MFA program, and was it a wake-up call. I was completely overwhelmed in those first months. And what I began to realize is that my colleagues in the program were far more experienced than I was. They were better trained. They had a better background on stage. And so for those first months, it was nothing but catching up. Every single day was a labor of just trying to keep my head above water. I learned a lot about myself through that, because I was humiliated at times. I was frustrated. But there were small victories, too, I recall, and a lot of help from mentors and colleagues along the way. And so it became very clear to me that the daily work on myself, the daily work on an actor, was what was going to make it happen. And so I learned a great deal about my voice, about my range physically. I learned about genres. This program, and I thank them for this, they really made a point of knowing your theater history and dramatic form. So I learned a lot about genres. It was the first time I really did thorough readings of Shakespeare. I still didn't know really how to play Shakespeare, but I began to understand what maybe that great guy was about. And it was a real interesting journey that way. There was some interesting things this way too. They brought in 20 people. I don't think many programs, if any at all, do this now, but they would bring in 20 actors. And at the end of the first semester, they would cut 10 of us. So there was a pressure and a sort of an underlying competition to see who would make the cut. I wish they hadn't done that. I understand it. Maybe there were financial reasons, but if you made that cut, it was satisfying, but it also was a very sad time. And tell you just a quick story. They posted the 10 that made the cut on a bulletin board, just like a cast. And they did it over the weekend. So, and I think it's because they didn't want to be in their offices. I don't know. But and so that morning, I tell you, Nick, it was like I was going up and going to the gallows. I remember getting up and walking across campus and turning the corner into the corridor that was where the posting was. And there was one of my best friends, a very fine actress. She was right there at the posting, and she fainted. She just fainted on the ground, right on the linoleum tile. And I remember running to her, but I guess what, Nick? As I was going down to lift her up, I looked up to see if my name was on the list. Now, I'm not proud of that, but it does show you just the real focused attention of that. Now, to let you know, she went on to a very distinguished career as a publisher. So she did just fine. So off I went my second semester. And I'll tell you one story there, because I want the mosaic pieces of this to be stories. There was a real interesting situation for me coming from a very small drama club to having a bunch of teachers and then adjusting to their different teaching styles. And there was one fellow, and I will today call him my wicked angel. And you'll hear about my good angel, Nick. So I have a good angel on one shoulder and I have this wicked angel on the other shoulder, and they both keep me honest. And so this fellow was his renown for something that was happening that I don't see again happening too much in programs or teaching anymore. And that was they teach by intimidation. They would actually strip you down and put you into a little puddle and then build you up again. That was the teaching, and it was a sort of power struggle there. Not struggle, they held all the power. So this fellow was renowned in that. He would really do that. But he was a wonderful and exceptional artist and a great taste. So we respected that, but we all knew that it was going to come as a very hard lesson. So it was my turn to go up in his class, Nick. And I just wanted to really show him how good I was. So I prepared a Hamlet monologue, and it was the two solid flesh would melt, and you know that wonderful one. And my memory is that I gave it my all. I think I even jumped on a chair, Nick. I was just ranting and raving and full of anguish, and I thought it was magnificent. And I got off that chair and I sat there out of breath, thinking, finally I have impressed him. And it was a deep pause. And he said, "Warner, why are you wasting my time? When are you going to get off of yourself and get into the others?" Now, I was humiliated. I was mortified. I remember leaving, being so angry, in tears. But guess what, Nick? It was one of the great lessons of my life. That's the foundational aspect of Meisner. You don't do anything unless you do it off the other. And I carry that wicked but truthful thing on my shoulder, and it makes me a better teacher, you know? Get off of yourself and get into the others. Things like that were some things that I carry with me a little bit. The other part of what I really enjoyed in that program was my backstage work. I had to do something to, in fact, make the rent and pay the tuition. And I had a work study program in the scene shop. And that's when I really began to realize that the craft skills extended beyond just being an actor. It was really the first time I realized that it's nail by nail, brushstroke by brushstroke, stitch by stitch, puts a set and a costume and a production together. That coordinated effort, the first time I really, really sunk into me that this was why theater was difficult to do. This is why good theater had to be done in traditionally had to be done in certain ways. And that is part of the craft skills that I carry with me. This particular program really knew how to make theater well. And they did that, I think, with a great deal of integrity. And so I guess that was what I think back on it, what I learned most in the grad, how to do theater, how to make theater happen, and also the acquisition of craft skills, which I guess Stanislavski talks about in his first book, Actor Prepares. I had a very parallel journey to that young actor in his first book. I want to tell one more story, I guess. And that's a story about a dear friend. His name's John Garrity. And John was with me at Providence College. He was one of our leaders. He was a director, the first student director. And we both went to Catholic University together, eventually roomed together. Well, John, in the directing program, they had a number of directors, and they only had, as any directing program, just a few positions to give just a few directors for full stage productions. And at the end of the semester, John was not given a production. And he went home completely depressed for the summer, not even knowing whether he'd come back or not. Well, when he returned and we got together, he said, "Dick, I want you to look at this script. This is the script I'm going to do in the Black Box Theater." And it was, Nick, it was Story Theater by Paul Sills. I don't know if you know it or not, but It was done at Yale. Elaine Stritch, I believe, was in it. And what it's a retelling, an adult retelling of the Grimm's fairy tales. So you play animals, you play roosters, you play donkeys, you play peasants. It's all those fables. And I remember, Nick, laughing in John's face. I remember saying, are you kidding me? Well, here's the end of the story. He went around and he begged and cajoled and got all the best undergraduate actors in the building to get into this production. And we started rehearsing and trying to find rehearsal spaces. And we ended up in the upper lobby of the theater. And eventually, Nick, we would gather crowds for the rehearsal. There would actually be people coming to watch the rehearsals. We went into the black box and it was standing room only. It was packed. So the mentors got together and went to John and said, for the next semester, we're canceling one of the shows and we're putting your show on the main stage. And we went on the main stage, and frankly, Nick, we became one of the hits of Washington, D.C. And I'm telling you that story because John just did not give up in the face of incredible, like defeat. It was the worst possible thing that could happen to him. He was completely rejected, got back up, dusted himself off, and came in and produced that piece of work. And I'm very proud to be was a part of that. It was very satisfying. So those are the sweetnesses and also the real growing pains of my MFA.
That's great. That's wow. That's inspiring. So during, I guess, your time in your MFA, is that when you said you're collecting tools kind of to, you know, become a teacher? You said your Wicked Angel kind of gave you your Meisner teachings in his own way. Is that when you realized you wanted to become a teacher, or was that?
A good question. You know, no, Nick, I didn't. At that point, I just wanted to be an actor. But there was a next step that was really important. And that was, I still really didn't know what professional theater looked like. And it was really a step into professionalism that I think was the next step in my evolution to become a teacher. At that point, I just simply wanted to act and wanted to know more and more about that. But fortunately, the great entrepreneur of Catholic University was a fellow named Father Gilbert Harkey. He was a larger-than-life figure and an exceptional producer. And not only did he put together an amazing group of very highly opinionated educators, but he started a place called Only Theater, and it exists today. It's in Only, Maryland, and had deep connections to Catholic University at the time. And both the directors and a lot of the students went up there to do internship programs. And I was invited to go. So off I went, and I was one of what was called the slab boys. So see if I describe this. Stage left, there was a tiny little area that was the scene shop. And then outside, through some big open doors, barn doors almost, there was a cement slab, a raised cement slab of about 20 feet by 30 feet. And that's where we put the sets together in the baking southern sun. It was really something out there. But we had the time of our lives putting these sets together. I remember once that I spent an entire week cutting out with a jigsaw patterns for a wallpaper template. They would dab a wallpaper template with these. It was and I had to do these intricate little filigrees to do that, and still loving it. I also remember this. I was the lightest person on the crew, and in the beginning of the year, I had to go up and clean the grid, and they would haze me. They would say, "Now look, there's some snakes up there, so you know, avoid those." Now, I never saw any snakes, but I did chase away some pigeons and some squirrels and some mice. And here's the thing, though. It was an old building, and the grid was made of entirely of wood. Most grids now are steel. And it was in the dry, dry heat and all that baking lights and all that. And as I walked across the grid, I could hear it crack, the wood crack. So needless to say, I held on to the rafters. Obviously, I didn't plummet 50 feet to the stage, but I made it across. checking the pulleys and making sure that all the hemp lines were good. So it was things like that that I was doing in that career. But eventually they kicked me upstairs, if you will. I was the head of props, and then I became a sound and light guy. And in those days, Nick, and people who are my age will know, you took a 33 RPM record and you put it on the turntable, and it was a sound effect record. And you went to Thunder Cue number 3 and you put the needle down, and then you took a little microphone and you recorded it on some tape. And then you took the tape and you spliced it into your show tape with a splicing machine. That was what I was doing in the sound thing. Well, eventually they made me assistant stage manager and then the stage manager. And why I'm telling you all this is that's where I really, really started to understand the process. And I think is something I carry into my teaching, because there were two very good directors. They came from the CU program. They had two distinctively different styles. And then at that time, at Only Theater, amazing actors were coming down, Broadway actors. Here's some names in the past that you might not know in your wonderful young age, but Sidney Walker, he was a member of Ellis Rabb's group, Phil Bosco, Pauline Flanagan, Steve Joyce, Max Wright, Hala Wines, Richard Bauer, and Jan Mind. It goes on and on. Carolyn McWilliams, Catherine O'Meara Noon. I saw some wonderful, wonderful actors, Nick, performing, rehearsing with these two directors. And I was from the posture of a stage manager, so I could actually observe it. It's why when I teach, I say to actors, if you want to go into film, see if you can do some extra work, see if you can do some day player work, so you really see the process before you have to do it big time. So this was my really training ground to watch these great actors work. And I have a couple stories I want to tell you. One is about the fellow Sidney Walker. Sidney eventually ended up as being one of the major people at ACT San Francisco. He had a limited but very successful film career. You can look him up. But Sidney was doing The Miser by Moliere. I was an assistant stage manager, and I was stage left with my headphones on, but I also had a little role. I was the clerk in it. So I was in costume with the headphones on. And after the opening night, Sidney would come out. He had an exit out the door, stage left. And he turned to me, saw me in costume, and immediately he made me the gardener. And so fully in character, off stage, no one could see it but me, he was chastising me as the gardener, plant the plant, and do that. Kept his energy going, kept the life of his character going, and never missed his cue. Just never missed his cue. So this went on for a week. So finally, the second week, I decided, why not? I made a little box, and I put some dirt in it, and I got a trowel. And so I got down on my knees, and I was digging in the dirt when he came out as the gardener. And he looked at that, Nick, and actually did a little dance in the air, just a dance, came over and hugged me. And from then on, it became an intricate little play off stage left. No one saw, just the two of us. And then he'd go back on and do the play. Now, I cannot tell you what that did to who I was as a performer, who I was as an artist, and what that meant about Sidney Walker. And to this day, I think back on the generosity of that and the extreme sort of wonderful playfulness of it, but also how he was keeping himself constantly in character. It was a real lesson. The other one I want to tell is about Jan Miner. Again, you might be too young to know this, but people know Jan is Madge the Manicurist. She did this Palmolive ad where you put your fingers in the Palmolive, and her line was, "You're soaking in it." And she made a lot of money that way, but she happened to be a wonderful classical actress. And she was hired to do a play called The Show Off. And she called it The Old Lady Hamlet, because it had tons and tons of lines. Now, she was probably in her 60s at the time, and she was having difficulty learning the lines. So I said to her as a stage manager, "I'll help you." And so I would get up at maybe 5:30 in the morning and go to the theater, shut off the guest light, turn on the house light, the work lights. And Jan would arrive because she wanted to do it in the theater. And we sit center stage and do the lines for 2 hours before the rehearsal. just drill the lines. And for me, it was a time where I could just share with her and really work with her and understand the discipline of it. She really was funny, witty, exuberant woman. And here she was really doing the craft work. It was necessary, the actor's work, to do the show. And she was just unbelievably brilliant in the show. So it was a real learning experience for me. But I think what I learned is that theater is difficult to do, Nick. It's hard. It's hard work. It's difficult to do. And to do memorable theater is even more difficult. To do, it takes a lot of chemistry, a lot of, if you will, almost theater magic. It's fortuitous when all the pieces work together. And I think anybody in theater realizes that when it really clicks. Sometimes it's a mystery, sometimes you understand why it really clicks. And there were times when I would sit there as a stage manager in awe of all the stuff that these wonderful actors and directors are putting together. So that's really my story. And then it's really fascinating for me is that one of the wonderful things about that time was there was a theater communication group, TCG, still very active, a wonderful group. They had national auditions, Nick, and they don't do it anymore, but they would go to regional theaters in the area and they would do preliminary auditions, select people, and then you would go to Chicago, at least this time, and you'd be in front of regional theaters. So it wasn't to get into schools, it was to get your first inroad into regional theaters. And I fortunately was selected. So off I went, and I got an offer to go to PATH Playhouse, Performing Arts Foundation in Huntington, Long Island. It's run by a guy named Jay Broad. And the person that hired me was a guy named Moses Goldberg, and he ran the children education program. And off I went, and it was my journey to move in my first gig. But I want to save that for maybe our next podcast.
All right. That sounds good to me. Thank you.